Welcome to the Northern Affinity Video Podcast. During this session, we will be having an unedited discussion with an expert. And what I'll be planning to do is, during our discussion, get them to teach me something. Teach me about something that's of interest, but also they are an expert in. I'm Michael Edwards, and I'm the founder of the Northern Affinity. And I will tap into our wonderful community to bring you along on my drive for self-improvement and my desire to learn. So please connect with me on various social media platforms, whether it's LinkedIn or Instagram or Twitter. And I'd love to hear from you what subjects you'd like to learn more about, or what subjects you think it'd be good for me to learn about. So please, you know, get in contact and let me know. All the details will be in the show notes, and you can send me an email or contact me by the various platforms. I really hope you enjoy the show. Right, welcome to the latest episode of the video podcast. I'm very delighted to say that I'm joined today by Neil. And for those who are watching us by the video, you can see on the screen there, we're going to be talking about content and specifically about creating content that connects you and your brand to the people you want to speak to, so your target audience. So firstly, welcome, Neil. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No, our pleasure. So do you want to kind of just maybe give a brief background to you and what you do before we kind of jump into the subject? It's probably a good place to start.
Yeah, so I'm Neil Robertson, and I'm the founder of 49 Marketing. I went to university, graduated with an English literature degree, realised that at the time I couldn't get a job anywhere except for H&M. Not to slate H&M, but... It was a terrible time for a graduate to get a job. I worked there for a little while. Didn't stay there too long, thankfully. So I then studied for a postgraduate qualification in journalism. I then worked as a news reporter for a couple of years. After that, I moved into PR. Did that for a couple of years, working in-house and agency. And then I moved into content marketing, which is what I do now.
Excellent. So I guess kind of on the subject of content, what probably a good place to start. What do we mean by content, and what is content?
Good question.
Yeah, it's probably a good place to start, isn't it?
Content can take various forms. I'd say that, you know, what I do is written content. So I specialize in, you know, like blog posts, press releases, service pages, CMS pages, how-to guides, all that kind of stuff. But you know, I used to dabble a little bit in visual content. I've also done ebooks and white papers. You know, people have so many different definitions of what content means. But yeah, for me, I'm mainly about the written content, i.e., you know, capturing people at the top, middle, and bottom of the sales funnel to kind of trigger an action. But I'm going to come on to talk about what those different actions are, because, you know, they will obviously vary depending on where the reader is in the funnel. But in a nutshell, it's for me, it's about written content, and that's what I'm going to talk about today.
Excellent. Yeah, well, obviously, you know, other forms of content include this one we're on right now, whether it's a podcast or video. Yeah. There's another example of that. And I think they're obviously, they all complement each other to a certain extent, don't they? But I guess the kind of first question around that is, why is it important to have content, firstly, and obviously then have good content that are put out there? What are people trying to achieve by getting content out there?
Well, I've got it underlined and in bold here, but it might sound self-explanatory, but, you know, tell the reader something that they can't find on another competing page on Google. You know, there's a lot of content out there. I don't have the exact number to hand, but I know it's millions of web pages of content on different subjects. And, you know, quite often it can be easy to get lost in the noise, as it were. So quite often you do get copycat content, as we call it in the industry, where, you know, basically someone's gone onto page one of Google, looked at the keyword they're trying to rank for, read the articles on page one, copied and pasted a few lines from that article, and then rewritten it. It's not the most imaginative approach. And I think there's quite a lot you can do to make your content stand out and to, you know, help it achieve that hard-hitting impact that you want to achieve from it. So what I'm going to talk about today are the kind of points of difference that you need in order to stand out. Because, you know, like I said before, even if you sit alongside other pages on page one of Google, you know, that's only half of the battle.
Absolutely, and kind of, you know, I'm not a content expert by any stretch of the imagination, but one of the things I've learned over doing it, obviously in this form and other forms, is how important research is. So, do you want to kind of give us a bit of an overview of that? And you know, is it important, and why does it matter?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm lucky in that I have access to various tools through the clients that I work with. They can be quite expensive. So you have tools like SEMrush, which costs about £220 a month, I think, or around that £200 a month. Ahrefs is another tool that I use for keyword research. There are other really good tools like Also Asked is another one. So that looks at like content clusters and what questions people are asking, which I'll come on to talk about later on. But yeah, I mean, just Googling your keyword and trying to see what other people are writing is quite a short-sighted strategy. So what I try and do is utilize as many tools as possible. What you want to look at, and again, this is something I can come on to talk about later on, but what you want to look at is not just the keyword itself that you're trying to rank for, but all of the associated keywords around that. So if we use your business as an example, you know, you wouldn't just want to rank for best co-working spaces. You know, you might want to be a bit more specific, you know, like best co-working spaces in Manchester. You might want to write a blog post about that. You might want to write about the best co-working spaces in Yorkshire, because that kind of allows you to create a more clearly defined piece of content and get to the people that you really want to reach. So I would say to anybody that it's not just a case of doing your research via the Google results page. You need to use all of these tools to see what else people are searching about. Otherwise, you're basically creating a piece of content that has limited growth potential.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess there's an important factor there as well about knowing actually who your audience is, because I think we're probably all guilty of it to an extent. When you start a business, is you probably have in your mind who your audience is, and it often changes and evolves.
Yeah,
over time.
Yeah.
I guess that's important with the content as well, being able to kind of move with what your audience is at that particular moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, something that has always worked for me is surveys, you know, customer surveys. So finding out not just who your audience is in terms of like the age, the gender and the location, but also, you know, their behaviors, how they think, the psychology. Well, we call it demographic and psychographic, right? So demographic is where you have, you know, their basic information, as I said, their age, gender, location. But then the psychographic is, you know, how do they feel when they see your brand? What words do they associate with your brand? What other websites do they visit? All this kind of stuff. You know, what kind of content do they like to see? All of that is so important in carving out your content strategy, because just knowing that you're writing for a 55-year-old man in Lancashire, it isn't really enough. You need to know more about their kind of behaviors and their psychology. So I'd say that's really important. I mean, it sounds very self-explanatory again, but just using your data from Google Analytics and Google Search Console, you can see what queries your website is discovered for the most often. I think Laura, who you spoke to the other day, may have said something about this in the SEO talk. It's a really good talk, by the way. I recommend anybody who hasn't seen it to go and watch it. But yeah, using Google Analytics, using Search Console, that basically shows you like how people are discovering your website. And then once they're on your website, what content resonates the most. So, you know, things like time on page, bounce rate, conversion rate. I mean, that is obviously the bottom line for most businesses, but I wouldn't say it's the only metric that you look at when you're assessing the impact of content. So there are loads of things to look at. And I think it's just utilizing all of that data that you have at your disposal.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, talk about research, I was doing a little bit before this, and I think one of the things I've noticed with a lot of content is often people are trying to position themselves as an expert within their field, quite rightly and quite understandably. But the problem is that I think sometimes the way it's written can be over complex, especially full of buzzwords and things like that.
So
I guess kind of from your point of view and your experience, how important is that in kind of understanding and writing it in the way that your audience actually will understand?
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the major point of differences when you're writing content is keeping it simple. I always say this: speak to the reader like a human being, you know, not like a robot. And this tip is especially important following the recent Google helpful content update. So when it announced this update, Google basically described it as a broader effort to ensure people see more original, helpful content. So written by people for people. And that phrase is so important here, by people for people. You know, 9 times out of 10, unless I'm writing for a very academic audience, I'll write in the same way as if I'm speaking to someone on a video call like now, or at the local pub or the local cafe or whatever, you know, and that's proven so effective for me in terms of not just the conversions, because as I said, I know that's the bottom line and that is really important, but also, as I said before, keeping people on the website, achieving a good time on page. Pages per session is another metric that I look at. So how deep are they going into the website once they see your content? It's all around creating awareness, but also creating a positive impression of the brand. I will always say this to people, the reader will not necessarily buy there and then when they read your content. Sometimes it can take up to 90 days. So when I'm looking at the Google Analytics data for my content, I actually pull the toggle along from 30 to 90 days because I believe that that reflects the essence of written content much more than if you look at it over a 30-day window. It's a long game. And I'll say this again and again. I may say it a couple of times in this podcast as well, but content is very much a long game. And I think that keeping the tone simple definitely allows you to achieve positive long-term results.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I've kind of experienced as well is like kind of like the almost the why yeah. Why is that piece of content being put out there? What is the purpose of it? And it almost feels like it. Sometimes the content's put out there and it's a glorified advert. It's about the thing that business is doing or who they are, and less about trying to offer something to the people, the reader. And does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that kind of that's that engagement piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Understanding the reader's challenge. So, you know, I use this phrase quite a lot about you, not us. So when you know, where there's a purpose with a piece of content, it has to be centered around the reader. You know, too often, in my opinion, businesses talk about how great they are and how great their products are instead of telling the reader how they're going to solve their problem. And that applies to both B2B and B2C businesses. That is always the fundamental priority of any piece of content, you know, to demonstrate an understanding of how your readers think, you know, and also what their challenges are, what motivates them to make a purchase, you know, what are the key drivers for them, basically. And I think that this you, not us principle applies to your overall content marketing strategy as well. You know, you need to mold this strategy around the needs and wants of your readers, not just rely on your own intuition. And what I mean by that is a lot of people kind of put a content plan together, like a spreadsheet, with things that they think will work because one of the sales team or one of the product team has told them we should write about this, without much thought about, you know, the keyword data, the difficulty, who you're competing with, the user intent, how the user would feel about a piece of content. You know, you've always got to ask yourself, would I find this piece of content engaging? I'm not ashamed to say that I've written content in the past where I've read it back and I've thought, I would be really bored if I read this. So I've then tweaked it again and rehashed it, because it's so, so important to always consider the reader, you know. And that's why, going back to what I was saying before about the demographic and psychographic targeting, it's so important to know who that reader is, because then you have 99% of an idea as to what motivates them and how they think. But, you know, you have to know who your readers are. I can't stress how important that is.
Absolutely. And I guess that kind of follow-on question from that is, then how do you find out? You know, we've talked about doing your research, but kind of, and obviously you've mentioned a few tools and things like that, but is there any other ways that people can do that? You know, for someone, you know, you're in that particular world, so you're doing it regular, so these various platforms can be really useful. But for someone who's doing the, you know, a blog a month for their business and they can't afford yet to outsource, what kind of things can they do to get as much as research and as much information about what the people want?
Well, this first point kind of depends on budget, but I'd say it also doesn't if you have a good email database. So I would definitely say customer surveys. You can send them out for free via SurveyMonkey. And if you have, I don't know, let's say an email database of around 10,000 plus opted in subscribers, I think that's a good way to go, because then even if you get a few hundred responses, that's a pretty good indication of who your audience is and how they think. You can pay survey companies, you know, the likes of OnePoll and YouGov, but I mean, that's if you have a budget of a few £1,000s, because they're not cheap. I have used them before and they are really, really good. They're also great if you're looking to do a national scale PR campaign. But yeah, they can be pretty expensive. Interviews is another great way. I mean, that's quite a low cost, hassle free way of finding out who your audience is. You know, setting up focus groups, for example, you're being face to face with the people on the ground, so to speak. You know, asking your customers what they like and don't like about your brand, what they, as I said before, what they think of when they think of your brand. You know, that kind of stuff. You can do these interviews remotely or in person. You may want to incentivize it because obviously, you know, people aren't going to do these things for free necessarily. But, you know, I've spoken to various marketing managers and directors over the years, and they've testified to how kind of effective that is. And then the third one is just your own internal data. So like I said before, Google Analytics, that has a demographics feature that can give you the basic information about your website's audience. Another neat tool that I've used before for more international clients is the countries facility on Google Search Console. So that basically shows you which countries people are reading your content from. So, you know, if you have ambitions to expand your business into kind of like a more global offering, then this tool can be really useful for that. I think as well, one thing I do want to mention actually is Hotjar. That's a heat map tool that I've used and I've had a lot of joy from before. And that can be a key part of your content strategy and knowing what people are clicking on and therefore, you know, getting some insight into who they are. So what I used to do was when I would write and publish a blog post, if it contained quite a lot of backlinks to supporting articles, then I would set up a heat map for it. So I'll give you an example of what I mean. I used to work for a caravan insurance company and I'd written an article about caravan safety and it's so niche, I know, but caravan safety. And I included a couple of links to articles that basically talked about the importance of draining down your caravan and how to get rid of damp in a caravan, because we insured caravan owners, right? So we wanted to show that we understood their challenges and gave them content that could help them overcome those challenges. Then they have a good perception of the brand. It's like, oh, who are these? I need to, my, you know, this isn't an ideal world, but you know, my policy's up for renewal, blah, blah, blah. So I created a heat map for that article anyway. When I looked back at the heat map about a month or two later, I noticed there were a couple of links that accounted for about 300 clicks each, which in an article that had, I think, about 2,500 visits at the time, that's pretty good going. You know, these two links alone accounted for something like a quarter of the clicks, and it was how to drain down your caravan and how to get rid of damp in a caravan. So what did I do? I then went out and approached some influencers in the caravan space, and surprisingly there are influencers in the caravan space despite what you might think, and interviewed them and managed to get two really good pieces of content from it. They drove quite a lot of assisted conversions, which was great. We sold quite a lot of policies off the back of it. So that is just one example of how effective Hotjar can be. So, yeah, quite a long answer to a short question, but hopefully that kind of gives you an idea and gives anybody watching this an idea of kind of how you find out who your readers are and what they want.
No, it makes a lot of sense, because I probably a personal example I can think of that she's kind of, I guess, a more rudimentary way of doing that is you know, I'm connected to a lot of business owners on LinkedIn, and they are my potential customers. A lot of the stuff that I often put out on LinkedIn is based on what I'm hearing them talk about in their posts.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, I hadn't really thought about it this particular way, but you know, it kind of makes sense. I'm putting this content out there because I've seen that this type of thing matters to them. I mean, the big thing over the last couple of years or so has been kind of remote working, hybrid type conversations, yeah, that seems to get people going. And like I said, I know that my audience, I'm hearing them talking about it, so therefore me talking about it is going to potentially create engagement. So there's, you know, social media can be a powerful tool for that.
Yeah, social media, forums was another one. Used to read a lot of forums, especially if it's something really niche, because a lot of the time you're not necessarily going to know. And I am going to come on to talk about this later on, but you know, a lot of the time, if you're a writer, whether you're, you know, agency or even in-house or freelance like I am, you know, you're not going to be an expert on all of the things that you're writing about. Obviously, as I said before, doing your research is really important. But also, as you said just there, seeing what people are talking about on forums, it's like, oh, I've got this problem. Again, I'll use another niche example, but I used to work for, it was the same company, but it was housed under one umbrella. It was a boat insurance provider. And I don't know the first thing about boats. You know, I've never owned a boat before, never owned like a narrow boat or any of these things. But how I learned about that community was just by watching YouTube videos. Like you just said there, reading social media posts, going on forums. It just gave me such a clear insight into what people wanted, the kind of content they wanted. And to be honest with you, I managed to get a bit of a rhythm going with it. So I started writing one or two things, mostly how-to content, but also content with like popular YouTubers and stuff like that. And it just resonated so much. And I could see that on the dashboard on Google Analytics. And that was when I realized, okay, we need to do more of this. And it does become easier as time goes on, the more familiar you become with your audience.
Absolutely. And I guess this kind of runs on as well to this. I think I kind of distinctly put content into two areas when I see it. It's kind of people telling us how good they are at what they do.
Yeah.
And people showing us how good they are at what they do. And yeah. The showing is often, actually when they're showing us, it's often not them saying it, if that makes sense. It's,
I love that.
It's other people.
So
how important is, and to be fair, there's probably a place for both as well. But I guess it's a bit like anything. You need to do a little bit of both of them, at least a balance of the two. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I like that saying, by the way. I'm going to steal that one. Showing what you do. I mean, it's so important. I mean, so social proof is basically the word there. That's the saying, I should say. You know, social proof is everything. That sells your product or service on its own quite a lot of the time. You know, for example, if you're writing a commercially focused piece that touches on specific products, then I think social proof can be huge. So by social proof, which is exactly what you've just said there, you know, someone other than you saying that X product or X brand is great, i.e. your customers, you know, your customer reviews are amazing because, you know, they're unique to your website. The reader cannot find them anywhere else on the internet unless you get some cheeky person copying them. Well, I don't know why they'd want to do that, but unique content, and Google loves unique content. So as I said before, the people on the ground, people like your readers, you know, your customers, they can give you this unique insight that you cannot get anywhere else. You know, so I mean, from my point of view as a reader, basic human psychology would dictate that if you're reading an article that you found on Google about, let's say, the best pressure washers on the market, you'd sooner read a genuine review from a Karcher customer than have the head of marketing at Karcher saying their pressure washers are great. I don't care what a suitor, a company thinks. I care what people like me think, because they're the people I can relate to. They have a common problem like mine. Their problem has been solved and now they're really happy. You know, that's why social proof is so good. And I would say to anybody writing, for example, a blog post about specific products, user reviews are everything. They're so important. I mean, I use them in pretty much every piece of content I write on that subject. Case studies are another good example of social proof. So, you know, if you can get in touch with a customer and spend, say, half an hour like we're doing now, you know, getting them to explain what challenge they had, what you did for them, and, you know, how you helped them overcome that challenge, then that can turn into an amazing piece of content. You know, you're essentially, it takes the pressure off you in a way, because you're basically transcribing what they say and using it to promote your business. It's, as the saying goes, it's money for old rope. So testimonials are great as well. They're another good example. So I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent and talk about email marketing, but I would say to any business owner that if you have a decent sized email database, as I said before, then it's well worth firing off an email to your customers every now and again, you know, offering them an incentive in exchange for a positive review or a testimonial. You know, that could be like a voucher, money off the next order, etc. You know, I've done this in previous companies I worked for, and it's definitely paid off. So I'd recommend that to others. But yeah, I mean, they're everything. Like I say, reviews, case studies, testimonials. Make them sell your content for you at times. You know, I'm not saying that you should just solely rely on that, but they can be so important and they add so much authenticity to your brand. They make it a lot more believable. It's not just you saying you're great. It's people that are telling other people just like them that you're great.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I was just thinking then, I remember, and I can't remember the exact number, but it's not really content related, but it is very relevant to this, is there's been research done in the restaurant food world where you are something like several hundred times more likely to go to a restaurant if a friend or a family member recommended you go than just by seeing an advert or driving past them or whatever you do. It's like there's so many times in there, and a lot of the things they try to do is to get people to tell other people, and that's quite a difficult thing to do. But I know there's a lot of research in that world, and that I would imagine equates for it'll be different percentages, I guess, in all sorts of different industries, but it'll still apply for everybody.
Oh, it will. Absolutely. I mean, I'm always, to be honest with you, Michael, I'm always quite jealous of businesses that get their custom solely through word of mouth. I'm not quite at that point just yet, but no, you're right. I mean, so often, how often, when you're trying to book a hotel or a restaurant or buy a product, as I said before, how often do you look at the user reviews? I do every single time. I won't do it without looking at that. So the same applies to businesses. It's like I said before, whether you're a B2B or B2C business, that social proof is so important. It's just validating what you say about yourself. That's basically what it does.
100%. And I guess that kind of builds into one of probably the final questions I was going to ask you is about about trust, essentially. Often trust in a one-to-one basis and people, you do it by getting to know someone over time and kind of getting to know them. But obviously for businesses, especially kind of high volumes, that you can't do that. So you've got to build trust in other ways. And I guess, how can you do that through content?
Well, I think the best way to build trust is by utilizing expert insights. So I said right at the start of this podcast that you do get quite a lot of copycat content out there. It's a difficult to say, as you can see, a bit of a mouthful. Yeah, copycat content. But, so many businesses will look on page one, as I say, what else is ranking? We'll just copy them and we'll rewrite it. But by doing that, you're not giving people anything new, and you're certainly not appearing authoritative. I mean, no one's ever been authoritative by copying someone else. You have to stand out on your own. So, utilizing expert insights is probably the key point of difference, in my opinion. This tip has come up in a lot of industry webinars that I've watched recently. So they talk about the importance of boosting your EAT score, so expertise, authority, and trust, for anyone who doesn't know. And reaching out to an expert is best for that. It's to me, it's pretty much the only way you can do this. Unless you're very good at pretending you're an expert on something. I'm certainly not. I write about a lot of subjects in my job that, as I said before, I'm not an expert in. I think most people like me would be in the same boat. Unless you're in-house and have been in that business for a number of years to the point where you know the product inside out, you're not going to be an expert. So I'm not an expert, but I know I can write well. So I have to kind of play to my strengths while utilizing the strength of someone else, which is their product knowledge. You combine those two things together, you're going to get some amazing results. So that's why it's so important to work with a subject matter expert, or SME as they're called, because they give you that unique perspective. They give you that cut through that kind of helps your content stand out. I think as well, another really important point is they act as a fact checker. If you're going out and kind of writing this content on your own and portraying yourself as an expert on it, even though you're not, you run the risk of making a couple of mistakes because you don't know the industry inside out, or you don't know the product inside out. I mean, you can do a lot of research, but there's going to be certain holes there because you can never substitute your experience for someone else's, so what I tend to do if I'm writing about something I don't know all that much about is I'll have a briefing call with said expert. So if it's a client, for example, it could be the managing director of that company, or the marketing director, or the product manager, whoever it is, someone with that specialist knowledge. And I'll just have a briefing call, a little bit like I'm doing now, make some notes of what they've said, and then write the content. But also then run it past them before it goes live, because as I said before, there will be one or two areas where they might say, that's not quite right. Here's what it really is. And then you've got not only a unique piece of content, you've got a very authoritative piece of content, because you're not just copying what someone else has written that you don't know is 100% accurate, so that's really important. I sound like a broken record, but you can't get this content anywhere else. That is really, really important. And I think providing that you are leaning on an expert and giving your readers something of unique value, honestly, that will stand you in such good stead in the long run.
Now that makes sense. And I think, you know, we've covered a lot of the things there. I think that's really, really, really important for people to think about and work on. And the thing is, with a lot of people, when even if they're not creating the content themselves, they might be outsourcing it to someone like yourself. I think having enough knowledge of what you need, you might not be doing it, but it's important to have that knowledge as well. I know someone like myself, I know that I'm not very good at writing the content, hence the reason why I do video and podcasts and stuff like that. Yeah. But to have enough knowledge of that, I think, is really, really important. So all the things you've gone through there is, you know, I've made quite a lot of notes as well. So, I think that's great. And I guess just finally for me, if people want to find out a little bit more about you, Neil, and what you do and all that kind of stuff, where's the best places to find you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn and my website. So LinkedIn, it's Neil Robertson, 49 Marketing. 49 is all one word, and the F and N are capped up, but you should find me if you do a quick LinkedIn search. And then the website is www.49marketing.com. I'm just about getting that live, and I'm glad we're recording this there. Well, I won't reveal the date, but the website will be live by the time this goes out, so that's a good thing. But yeah, that's where people can find me. I am looking at potentially going onto Facebook as well, but I mean, most of the conversations I have with people, you know, we met on LinkedIn, for example, so I pretty much just use LinkedIn and my website.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anyone, for whatever reason, can't find you, I'm sure they will. All the details will be in the notes, both on the YouTube and on the podcast. And also, if, you know, again, for whatever reason, you don't find that, you know, contact us at Northern Affinity and I can push you Neil's way. So I just want to say thank you. Yeah, lots of really valuable information. I'm sure a lot of people got a lot from that. So thank you very much, Neil.
Great. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this chat today, and like me, you learned something new from our wonderful expert. So if you'd like to hear from more of our sessions, please subscribe on whatever platform that you get your podcast from to hear more. And also, we'd love to meet you at some point at one of our upcoming events. We, the Northern Affinity, hold events all across the north of England, and we'd love to meet new people and have guests along. So please come along and check out our website or all the details in the show notes. Thank you very much for listening, and see you next time.